we try to limit some of that screen time so they're not in front of a TV. We want them to be outside and engaging, being present with people. Because that's where you're building those life skills. You're not going to build that through playing a video game. Certainly, we live in a world that's technology focused, but I think we would be doing our kids a disservice if we didn't teach them that difference. Because I think that can breed entitlement if we're not teaching them that difference between a privilege and a right.
My name is Tim Anderson. Welcome to Father and Friend, where men learn to live for the good of their families.
Today we're with Joe. He is the founder of You Matter Dad, where he focuses on helping dads learn how to share their joys and struggles of growing in fatherhood. He loves encouraging men to have emotional awareness and learn how to regulate their emotions so that they can show up for their kids in a more powerful way. Joe is the father of three, and we're going to spend some time talking about what he's doing with his family to make a positive impact. Joe, how's it going?
Good, good, good. Thanks for having me on, Tim. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome. Why don't we just start out? Tell us a little bit about your own upbringing. What did that look like?
Yeah. So I grew up as basically a single child. I have a brother and sister who are 7 and 8 years older than me. And so that dynamic really continues to play a role in just how I've parented with my three boys. I really didn't have a sibling to play with or really engage with. And so that was very much a struggle, I think, when I look back at that. Nothing my parents did wrong there. Just the timing aspect of being that young. I grew up as a PK, pastor's kid. And so I was very much tag along with different meetings and events that would happen. And so...
So when you were 10, your siblings were pretty much on their way out of the house.
They were, yeah. And at that age, it's like you want to be a part of anything older, right? So my 11-year-old now, Aiden, very much wants to be part of, you know, the 12 and 13-year-old, what they're doing. And that's how it was for me at 10 and 11, is very much wanting to be part of what my brother and sister were doing. And they were kind enough to let me tag along occasionally on some things, you know, but I really put my focus probably in sports growing up. That was my go-to. And so I had friendships that came and went growing up. I didn't really have any solid, I would say, connections that I made. And so that was difficult too, trying to navigate that as a child. You know, I think it's important to have kids your age and friends that you can engage with. And so that's kind of where things were at that point.
And so as a pastor's kid, you found that there were some expectations on you that maybe were not what you hoped for or unexpected, maybe?
Yeah. So not to throw my parents under any bus by any means, because it wasn't their doing. It was, I think, more of an unsaid expectation that, you know, as a pastor's kid, I felt like there was certain ways I had to act, I had to behave. And so that just put some, I think, pressure on myself, where I was a very shy and reserved child. It wasn't probably until I was out of high school where I really felt kind of that weight lift off, where I felt more of what my purpose was and kind of came out of my shell. But certainly the pressure of maintaining, I think, a certain idea of how a pastor's kid should act and behave put some of those pressures that I didn't necessarily know at the time on myself. And so there was some, I think, some struggle there with that.
Yeah. So you grew up almost as a single child, functionally as a single child. And how did that impact your fatherhood? You mentioned it in passing. What did that mean for you as you got into fatherhood?
Yeah. So I think, you know, very, very young, I was goofy. I was a goofy kid. You know, my parents will say that. My uncles will say that. My siblings will say that. I'm very wild in that sense. And so I think when I became a parent, some of that shifted for me. I think I put away kind of the childish things, in the sense of I now have to be serious. I have to have it all together. I have to make sure that I'm showing up every day for my wife and for my kids. Because at that time, my wife and I had agreed that it would make more sense for her to be a stay-at-home mom. And so it was not only the pressure of having to provide for my family, but it was now kind of this unspoken thing that I had to put away some of those childish things. And I kind of went off the deep end there in that sense, where it was, I kind of lost myself, I would say, in that process. I kind of reattached my identity to just in that sense of being a dad that is focused strictly on provision and protection. And I lost some of the emotional awareness that was happening around me, from my own behavior, from how I would speak, my tone, a language I would use. And so that was a long process, you know, and so we spaced our kids out about 2.5 years, 3 years apart. So there was time where we weren't just suddenly had three children to take care of, you know.
From 0 to 3, yeah.
Yeah, I know other dads and parents have that, you know, or suddenly you go from 1 to 3, you have twins or something happens where suddenly you're being pulled a lot harder in different directions to navigate that. And so we were excited. We were expecting, you know, it wasn't a surprise by any means. So, but I think as any new dad, there's worries and struggles that you're unsure of, right? It's the first time you're becoming a parent. It's the first time you're doing this on your own with your spouse. And so I think there was a lot of, for me, kind of, hey, am I doing this right? Am I parenting right? Am I doing this okay? Because growing up as kind of that single child, baby of the family, I didn't have that dynamic where you have a close sibling where you're able to kind of have that rivalry or that, you know, the back and forth with your brother, or your sister. And so as we grew our family, that dynamic was hard for me to kind of understand, the dynamic between three brothers or three siblings that close in age. And so I started to, I think, internally really struggle with that from a parenting perspective of, hey, are my kids being too loud? Are they being obnoxious? Are they normal? Like, is this normal behavior?
Especially with boys.
Yeah.
It's sometimes hard to.
It is, you know?
Yeah. Especially when we're told that boys should, you know, you think about the public school system, you know, boys are supposed to sit in classrooms just like girls and sit down and be very quiet. And, you know, I've got six children. My three younger ones are boys, and they're pretty close in age. And wow, do they love swinging their arms and tackling each other and pushing each other down and punching each other for fun. And they're all laughing about it.
Uh-huh.
You know, my two girls don't enjoy that, you know, for whatever reason, they just don't.
Yeah. And so that's part of it too. You know, it's like, I didn't have that. I mean, my brother, I certainly punched him occasionally. And I think, you know, just with the three boys, it was like kind of a shock. I'm like, okay, I know there's chaos happening. And so I struggle with that internally a lot, you know, and making sure that fear of what other people are going to say. I think that was a big one for me. Like, how is that going to come back and showcase who I am as a parent? You know, am I failing? Am I doing enough? And so anytime my kids would be loud or obnoxious, according to my standards of what I was thinking, because my internal world was already chaotic at that time. And so I would react instead of understand. I would react instead of be curious. And curiosity, I think, is a great way to kind of understand the situation before you make a decision as to how you're going to react. And that got me in trouble, you know, just with tone, volume, you know, in response, whether that was yelling at my kids because I couldn't handle it. My internal world was chaotic. And now I was releasing that on my children, you know, when they had no idea what was going on in dad's world.
Right.
His internal world, his internal struggle. So a lot of internal forgiveness for myself on that. Shoo. I think.
Do you feel like some of that came from that upbringing as a pastor's kid, and you're in that child position feeling like you have to live up to this standard that you're not, you know, you can't mess up, and now you have kids of your own, and sort of automatically now you're having similar expectations of your own kids without even trying? You just know, hey, in this situation, you shouldn't be loud. Everybody knows that. in this situation, or everybody knows that in quotes, right? In this situation, you shouldn't act like this. You should act like this. You shouldn't do this. You shouldn't do that. Do you feel like that's kind of the parallel between your upbringing and your fathering?
100%. I think it was very, you know, yeah, that's probably the best way I could describe it is the expectation of let's just be aware of where we're at. You know, and we didn't want to like cause a scene or have attention on us per se, I think. And so that struggle was very much passed down onto my three boys. You know, my boys are 11, 8, and 5 now, but I think earlier on when they were younger is very much struggling with that. You know, what are people going to think if my kid is too loud? Like just, and I'm going through 1,000 different conversations and scenarios in my head at that time, thinking worst case scenario, like, guys, you just got to be quiet or whatever. I'm trying to manage and helicopter my parents, and it's causing me stress. Right? Causing this anxiety build up in my chest. I can feel it. I can feel the pressure. I can feel all of these things. And it's just a boiling pot that starts to boil over. And I'm, you know, raising my voice at my kids that I don't want to. And so what's helped with that is certainly processing with my spouse a lot more. Because I internalize a lot of the things where I don't necessarily share or speak what's going on in my world. And so it's been helpful just to say, hey, is this okay? Like, are they being okay right now? Because this is new to me. Having three boys, like I said, growing up as a single child, baby of the family, I didn't understand that dynamic. I didn't know what was normal. I didn't know how siblings are supposed to interact with each other. And so we started to engage other parents that had boys and just reaffirming, hey, that's normal. Like, that's okay. That's normal that they do that. And so that kind of allowed me to take a step back and say, okay, I can take a deep breath. Like, okay, that's normal. Like, and trying to process that information was.
Do you feel like it's been a challenge to growing up as a pastor's kid when you feel like there's sort of behavior expectations on you? Has that been a challenge to wade through what is outwardly respectful to others versus what is truly right?
Yeah, I think that was very hard to separate. Mm-hmm. I think it was all or nothing. There was no subcategories of, hey, you're just being a boy, you're loud, you have lots of energy, you need to release it, versus, hey, you're being disrespectful, or that's something we don't do. It was very much, hey, it was almost like I was being a dictator and you don't do this, you don't do that. You can do this, you can't do that, you can do this. And it really caused more stress on myself, you know, because it's like I'm trying to control my kids. And I had to understand that what I can control is we can teach them, this is how we act, this is, you're going to say your thank yous, you're going to say your pleases, you're going to be respectful. Like, we can teach them that. But at the end of the day, we can't control our kids. We can do everything in our power as parents to teach them the core values, to be a good person. But if, at the end of the day, they're still going to make choices that have good consequences and bad consequences. And that was hard. That's hard for me to kind of process through. Because I think as a parent, you want what's good for your kids, and you don't want to see your kids struggle. You don't want to see your kids get in trouble. You don't want to see your kids mess up, but it allows them to learn. And they're only going to learn by going through some of those scenarios where we have to take a step back as a parent and allow them to realize their choices have consequences. And so that was very hard, I think, for me to kind of come to that realization, where I had to kind of release some of that control and just trust that, hey, everything that my wife and I are doing, that we're pumping into our kids as far as core values and everything else, that they're going to be a good person.
Yeah. Is that what you, one of your values related to what you want to teach your kids? So we can jump into, let's just go ahead and jump into the items that you are teaching your family or you're doing with your family that are having a positive impact. And one of those things was teaching core values. Mm-hmm. What are those and how do you do that?
Yeah. So the core values, I don't know if we have like bullet points per se, but it's very much, you know, teaching them privilege.
I'm here on a job site with Tim, who owns his own electrical contracting business.
3 employees and 2 work trucks.
Tim traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance. We're positively here where he needs us most.
They sure are.
With step-by-step help on all his insurance needs, all for shockingly low rates.
Shockingly low, huh?
Just a little bit of electrician humour. Do you get it?
I got it.
You know, it feels like we have a real connection. All right, I'll stop.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
Just versus rights. That's a big one because I think in this world that we live in, we can confuse the two where we think privilege is a right. And so that's also, I would say, teaching gratefulness. So being grateful for all that we have. So we utilize the privilege. Hey, this is a privilege. This isn't a right that you have. You know, a right is having a place to sleep, food, shelter, you know, some of those basics. You know, there's other obviously rights that we have, but we believe that a lot of the stuff that we do that are kind of the extracurricular activities are privileges. And depending on how, you know, how they've acted, we just remind them of that. Hey, just remember, this is a privilege, not a right. And so that's just teaching them to be more grateful for what they have. You know, that was probably part of the struggle too, is as having 3 boys, there's things that are going to break. And that was hard for me, you know, because again, growing up, a lot of this is tied to, I think my struggle was
I've already committed that I'm not buying anything else until my boys are like 15 years old or something.
Yeah. Like furniture, you know, it's like you buy the couch, you know, there's going to be a spill stain on it within a week, you know,
a pair of scissors right in the center of it, you know, or right. Something.
Exactly. So I had to kind of reshift that focus of, hey, I have 3 boys in my house. The house is going to be messy. There's going to be toys everywhere. There's going to be dirty clothes. They're going to do some disgusting things, you know, as boys, you know, but it's amplified to the point where growing up, that was like a shock to me. I'm like, holy cow, that's where my struggle really came from, is like, this is overwhelming for me. This says more about me than it does my children. Because I'm filtering their behavior through my lens of how I grew up.
Yeah.
And that was very difficult. It's still difficult sometimes to remember that in the heat of a moment. And so those core values are important, you know, being a good person, going out of your way to help, be helpful, contributions to the family. So teaching them, hey, we want to be helpful to those around us. If we can be helpful, let's be helpful. Because that goes a long way, you know.
So you teach, so gratefulness, that's something you do. You remind your children when you go places that these are things are not expected, but these are privileges that you get. You should be thankful that you receive these things. Is that enough just to remind them? I guess I'm just curious, does that work? Or do you feel like, I don't know, you need to do something else to encourage that?
Yeah.
Thankfulness?
Yeah, I mean, the privilege side of things, you know, I guess you could use that as like video gaming. You know, there's video gaming is huge right now. My oldest loves that. If he could, he play video games all day, every day, you know, and so that in our minds is a privilege. It's not a right that you get to game and you get to do these things. It's, hey, that takes time. That's screen time. We try to limit some of that screen time so they're not in front of a TV. We want them to be outside and engaging, being present with people. Because that's where you're building those life skills. You're not going to build that through playing a video game. Certainly, we live in a world that's technology focused, but I think we would be doing our kids a disservice if we didn't teach them that difference. Because I think that can breed entitlement if we're not teaching them that difference between a privilege and a right. For me, that's been a big one, is just I grew up being very thankful for all that I had. And part of that is probably because, again, I was a baby of the family, a single child. So I didn't really have any other sibling taking from my stuff or pulling from my stuff that I had. And so there's lots of facets there that I think play a role. But I think that's been helpful for them to understand of, hey, what I'm doing right now is a privilege and I'm going to be thankful for what I have. When they don't do what we've asked of them, then they lose some of those privileges. So it's up to them. Again, we can't control our kids, and that's hard, you know, because you want your kid to do the right thing all the time, but that's not reality. You know, our kids are going to mess up. They're going to say things when you don't want them to say something. They're going to do things that might embarrass you. but that's life. You know, we're going to learn as we go. You know, we're doing this for the first time. Your kids are experiencing things for the first time. And I think we can really place a lot of weight on that when they mess up. And so our approach is, hey, you know, what you did, you is going to force you to lose some of your privileges or lose time, you know? So instead of, you know, an hour of screen time, you might get 45 minutes of screen time or a half hour of screen time or whatever it is, you know? That's just, I guess, showcasing some of that gratefulness. We're not saying, hey, you need to verbally say thank you, like be grateful. Like, we're not forcing it. We're just saying, hey, just be mindful that this is a privilege that you get to do, not a right. And so we'll usually set that stage before we do anything. And so it's very subtle. We're not making it a big grandioso thing where we're putting that pressure on them. It's just little reminders here and there.
And then you mentioned being helpful, and then you mentioned being a good person. I want to hear, how do you encourage your children? How do you make that a value in your household to be helpful?
Yeah. So I think contributions to the family is a big one, you know, so just reminding them, hey, you live here, you know, yes, there, you have a right to be here. But contributions to the family are just, you're being helpful, you know, coming up to us and saying, hey, how can I be helpful? Whether that's taking 5-10 minutes and picking up, you know, their toys or their crumbs that they had, or, you know, making their bed, emptying the dishwasher. Those are some of the things that as they get older, it's giving them more responsibilities, because if they don't know how to manage some of those responsibilities, I think the older they get, they're going to have a harder time managing some of those responsibilities. And part of that is, hey, you're building trust with us by continuing to contribute, to be helpful, so that when you get older, we can trust you with more things. You know, whether that's going to a friend's house, you know, driving your car when you get older, being able to take a trip, whatever that might be. It's, I think, really instilling that sense of, hey, I want to be helpful in the sense that I have time to take out of my day to better the situation or help somebody that's in need. And that starts, I think, in the house, you know, by parents being that example. And so I'm not waiting for my wife to nag me to do something. If I see a need, I'm going to fill it. I'm going to step up and I'm going to do my part. And I think as parents, when we can showcase that, the kids kind of follow suit, right? Oh, dad's doing that. Mom's doing that. You know, so when we can make that part of our daily lives, I think that really changes things, where they are naturally wanting to be helpful and contribute to what we do as a family.
Yeah, that's good. So the last one on the values was, you said being a good person. Now, you grew up in a, would you say you grew up in a Christian household?
Yeah. Yep. 100%.
And would you say that those principles, is that what you would sum up as the idea of being a good person?
So I know my faith is very important to me. You can be a good person, obviously, and not have faith, you know, not to get down that rabbit hole, but I think the good person aspect is just being kind, you know, being helpful when you can, and just being aware of how you're treating people. I think a lot of the times as humans, we strive to be right. And sometimes when we strive to be right, we can end up hurting somebody in that process. And so being a good person, I think, is subjective and as to what that looks like for everyone. And so I think for us with our kids, it's just being emotionally aware of how you're talking to somebody with your tone. You're helpful when you can be. You're grateful for the things that you do have. And I think the rest kind of falls in line as they get older. That's really helpful to have some of those core principles, I think, in play.
You wouldn't say it's subjective for your own kids, right? You would say that you are teaching them something very specific in bringing them up in these areas, helpfulness and gratefulness. You would say that's important. That's not subjective to you, right?
Right. Yeah. Some of those core values, you know, just as, you know, again, you know, as parents, it's our job to, you know, cause we can get into a rhythm of, you can be an active parent, you can be a passive parent, you know, and so it depends on how you want to be perceived, you know, with your kids and your relationship there. I think our kids are a direct reflection of us.
Big mirrors.
What was that?
Big mirrors.
You know, and so it's, and that's part of it. You know, it's how do you want your kids to perceive you the older they get? You know, do you want them to have good memories of you growing up where you were teaching them, you know, some of those principles, or were you a parent that was just very passive, wasn't very present, not really teaching them any concepts or life skills? Because we do a lot of this, you know, we do a lot of the screen time, and we escape, we numb ourselves by scrolling and just being detached from our reality. And so really teaching our kids that, hey, being present is very important. Eye contact is very important. When someone's talking to you, look at them in the eyes. So that way that they know you are fully present with what they have to say. That's important. It's important for me, just in conversation with my friends and my relationships. If I see somebody just checked out, that they're not really paying attention, that's telling me that, okay, A, they're maybe distracted, or they have some ADD. I have ADD. So certainly having some grace there, but I just know that goes a long way.
So your second item is spending as much engaging time with them as possible. How do you do that? How do you spend as much time with your kids as possible? And what do you do with them?
Yeah, great question. I feel like that's picked up a lot in the last couple of years as my kids have gotten older. They're capable of doing more things. And so that has gotten me more excited to do things with them. My wife is grateful for that too, because she can set them up with me and she can go do her stuff, which I love. And so it's very much, I think, as a parent, when you become and decide to become a parent, there's a lot of responsibility, right? You're taking on a child that you can mold and form, I mean, and teach them things that can be good or bad. And so as they've gotten older, it's very much spending more of that time. When I come home from work, I'm being more aware of how much time I'm maybe on my phone. I will do kind of a regulation exercise before I come home, because I know with work, maybe I had a bad day at work. I don't want that to bleed over into how I respond to my kids or my wife, which has happened, unfortunately. But learning from that, we're not going to get it right every day. It's just that if we can be more aware to better ourselves a little bit each day, I think that's really beneficial. So regulating before I come home from work, I can now leave that baggage at work or at the door, so that when I engage with my kids, I'm not engaging from a place of frustration or stress. I'm engaging from a place of, hey, I reset myself and this is all new to me. My conversations with my kids are all new. I'm experiencing this for the first time, and I'm not going to let something that happened earlier in the day impact how my responses are going to be to my kids. And so we'll play catch, we'll play cards, we'll do Pokemon. That's a big one right now. My kids are into.
You're all in.
I'm all in. And I heard a couple of years ago, I went to a conference. I forget the guy's name, but he had said that one of the most important things you can do as a parent is be all in with whatever your kids are into. And growing up growing up in the sports world, I thought I had this idea of what parenting was going to look like when I had boys. Oh, they're going to be involved in sports. They're going to do all these things and it's going to be so much fun. And the reality was, is I had to really take a step back and say, hey, this isn't about me. My kids may want nothing to do with sports, or they might want to do a sport that I have never done before. And that was the case. You know, one of my kids is in soccer. I never played soccer before, so I'm learning all about soccer. My oldest, he took a break from sports. That was hard, you know? And so I had to reshift kind of that focus. When he started talking about Minecraft and building and Legos, I could have easily said, I'm not doing that. Like, that's not what I want to do. And lose that connection with him. And so this, what I remember from this guy was just be all in whatever your kids are into in that moment, because that is showing that connection with them. And I've seen that connection with my boys, just in being all in and learning about Minecraft, learning all of those details, learning about Pokemon, learning about soccer really goes a long way when we can be all in with what they're passionate about.
No, that's good. I had a conversation with a guy a few months ago, and he has a memory. He's in his 30s, and he has a memory of his 14-year-old self, and his dad every year would ask his kids, what do you want for your birthday? And he would generally do it. He would get whatever they asked. And so this gentleman, he had it all planned out. On his 14th birthday, he had really been into this game, video game, for a while. And the time came, his dad asked him, what do you want for your birthday? And he said, Dad, the only thing I want for my birthday is that you take one day off work and play my video game with me. Mm. And his dad looked at him and said, I don't want to do that. And that sticks with him as such a significant childhood memory, that his dad wasn't interested in the things he was interested in. And that's what he wanted. He said, I just wanted my dad to be interested in what I thought was fun or interesting, even though, you know, it's just a video game. Like, he sees that now, it's only a game. Mm-hmm. But even still, it stuck with him as, and maybe the extension to that is, my dad's not interested in me.
Mm.
Right. That's the extension.
Yeah. 100%. You can go down a bunny trail on that, you know? And so I agree with you. We may not have any desire to learn about some of these things, but I've done my best to put away my perception of things or my desire to do something completely different. I want my kids to want to be in my life when they're older, when they have their own kids, you know, and that connection that we get with our kids, it's fleeting. You know, we don't have endless moments with our kids, you know. When they hit a certain age, they're, you know, 13, 14, especially 16, they tend to be more involved with their friends. And so we have a short window of opportunity to really build that connection with them and learn all we can with the things that they're wanting to learn about. Mm. So that's hard.
Yeah, no, that's good though. Yeah, so engaging, being all in with your kids. And so that broadly captures how you engage with them. They're interested in something and you try to say, yeah, let's do it. I'm going to jump in and try to figure this thing out.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it's been. And I've been sucked into some of the stuff. I'm like, oh, that's actually kind of fun. That's kind of cool, you know? And so it's healing me at the same time, which I think as men, you know, we don't want to get into the ooey gooey stuff, but I will tell you 100% right now, I feel so much better with who I am as a person, because now I'm feeling this weight and expectation of, oh, I don't have to be serious all the time. I don't have to just be in work mode. I can actually have fun and be childlike with my kids. Like, that's what we were designed for. As men, we're still kids at heart. And I think we lose that, where society has told us you have to have it all together. You can't be emotional. You can't do this and that. And so I think when we can really get to their level as parents and as dads, especially, you're creating that bond with them that can never be broken. You know, the more that we do that, you're building that connection stronger and stronger. And I think it's just a special thing.
Your third item, giving yourself grace and going after healing for yourself. Help me understand. We talked a little bit about that earlier, but tell me what that looks like for you and how that's impacting your family.
Yeah, I think the grace standpoint, I think we can be our biggest critics, which I did for a long time. I was very critical of myself. I wouldn't give myself a lot of grace, where I would either mess up or say something, and then I would just kind of internalize everything. And so my wife and I just recently went through this class that just really was teaching more on the nervous system and being aware of our autonomy as humans and what we need in the moment, so that way we can process and stay in our, what we call our green zone more, where we're not being triggered all the time. And that takes work, it takes practice. But I think growing up, I was very critical of myself, where I didn't see highly of myself. And so when you have a parent that doesn't, let's say, believe in themselves, that's going to bleed into how your own children think about themselves. And so I really wanted to shift that. I didn't want to continue down that path because it was affecting my relationship with my spouse, with my kids. Why is dad always angry? Oh, and that'll pierce your heart, you know? And that's a dad I didn't want to be. I didn't want to be that dad. And so it's a process, you know, we have to want it as dads. You know, look back when you were a kid, was there a toy that you really wanted that you would do anything for? And I think as a parent, we have to have that same mentality. We have to want it. We have to want to change. We have to want to get better. And there was just a point in my life where it was just like, okay, I have to change something here. And starting to give myself more compassion, because as I gave myself more compassion, I had more compassion to give. Where I wasn't as short with my kids, I gave more compassion to my kids when they messed up. Hey, that's not a big deal. It's okay. It's just a spill. Like, it's fine. But when we're so triggered and we have all of this chaos inside of us, that's what's going to come out. And so I've been on a big, I would say, grace journey for myself, and compassion, because I want my kids to know, hey, it's okay when you mess up. I want you to come to me first and not feel like you have to hide it in shame and guilt when you do something wrong or something didn't go your way. And so that's kind of the relationship that I'm trying to build with my kids right now.
How are you doing that with your boys so that they do feel comfortable coming to you? And I say that because from what you said, it sounds like some of that is really impactful to you, because I'm only guessing, you can correct me if I'm wrong, in your own upbringing, you felt some of that same, we talked about those expectations, right? Like, if you mess up, like, that's not good. Like, you can't do that. You can't mess up.
Right.
And there's not really room to maybe confess or to say, I'm sorry, without having repercussions of frustration or anger or something along those lines. And so some of your desire to change that is that you know what it feels like to be a kid who doesn't have the room to make a mistake. Would you say that that's accurate, or would you say that there's also another piece there that I'm missing?
No, I think that's pretty accurate. I would say I'm sure I could have messed up, but I think it was, hey, if I do something, what are the repercussions for the family name, right? My pastor is very involved. And so anything, if I was in trouble or if I did something that I wasn't supposed to as a kid, I would zip the lips and I wouldn't share. I wouldn't talk. I'm just going to keep this to myself. Yeah. Oh, and that pressure and just that constant pushing things down was very unhealthy. So, you know, it's still a struggle, you know? So, I mean, it's not like I want dads to know that this isn't suddenly a 180 and you're never going to struggle again. This is an ongoing battle day in and day out that, hey, you're going to have good days, you're going to have bad days. But I'll tell you one thing for sure is those good days are going to feel really good. And it's enticing to keep on that path to better yourself, because you're going to start to see those changes in your kids and the connections with your kids change. And so I think within our kids, I've really,
would you call that learning how to be, gentle with your kids? Like, how would you called it grace, or giving yourself grace, but with your children, would you call that learning how to be gentle with them, or how would you categorize that? What words would you use?
Yeah, I think one thing I've struggled with is my tone, how I say things. And that, I think, just in the English language in general and how we communicate as a human species, is you could say the same thing four different ways and it comes across four different ways, mm-hmm. right? And so tone has been a big one that I've been working on, because my tone can be it can come across as very condemning almost, you know, in how I've talked in the past. Of why can't you do this? Why aren't we doing this? Here we go again. Like, you guys always do this, and using verbiage that really can beat somebody down over time. And I think tone and how we say things is important to our kids. And that can come across as just being more curious in a gentle way, right? So we're not accusing, we're not coming at a situation with intensity. We're learning to come into a situation with maybe more curiosity. Hey, what made you do that? Or what's going through your mind when you did this? You know, and just trying to understand maybe their thought process, because when we go into accusatory mode or, hey, you did this, why did you do this? And just starting to really go at them, that's where that connection can break, and they feel like all of this weight and pressure, I can't mess up now. Like, 'cause dad's yelling at me and I did this one thing wrong and now I can't do that again, you know? And so I think when we can approach it with more of a questioning with them, it allows them to kind of almost navigate in their own minds what what was I thinking? Why did I do that? You know, and it's starting to teach them to think for themselves, critical thinking, versus just always being told what to do. You know, just do as you're told. You know, that can be a big one. Children have autonomy too. You know, yes, they're under our care, but they have autonomy where, hey, they don't have many places to go to, you know, if they're feeling that pressure. And so when we can ask more questions, my wife's very good at that. So she's challenging me day in and day out to be more like that, you know, to be aware of my tone in approaching those situations from a different perspective.
Yes. No, that's great. Do you, with that idea of like yourself, tone, and really focusing on that, how you say something, do you have categories that you use that are internal? I know in the Bible, like it talks about the heart, the intentions of the heart. Do you have categories like that that you talk about? Or are you mostly focused on the how something's said and how you're thinking about it?
I think for me, yeah, it's just, I think I have to do a check in my heart. It's almost before I respond to a situation, it's almost like a trigger. Instead of reacting, it's, okay, something just happened. You know, a big glass of water just fell off the table and glass shattered, water's everywhere. Initial reaction would be like, what happened? Why are we doing this? Why can't you be more careful? Why? And the reaction from the child is obviously dad's or mom has now escalated it even further. I didn't mean to do that as a child. It was an accident, but now I'm feeling bad because I spilled and I broke a glass, but now I'm also being yelled at. When we react versus trying to understand the situation, I think that's a different approach to allowing them, hey, it's okay that you messed up. You know, there's not really, I think, anything I process through from that perspective. It's just being more aware, I think, of how I'm saying things and learning to
not to escalate the situation beyond what it really needed to be.
Right. Cause at the end of the day, cause I'm responding from a place of, hey, something bad happened at work. I'm still holding on to that.
Right.
And now I'm responding from a place of agitation. When if I checked that at the door, if I processed through that, or I narrated that to myself in the car before I came in, I probably wouldn't have responded that way, you know? And so we, it's really a lot of work of, hey, I need to just respond in a way that I need to understand the situation first before I react.
Is that one of the practices you do when you're coming home? Do you do that? Narrate, like if you're stressed about something, you narrate it to yourself before you come into the house?
That's something I'm learning to do more. I would say for sure it's before I walk through the door, I take a deep breath in, deep breath out, and I kind of just process through that so I can come in level-headed. I'll narrate on my way home from work sometimes. I'm trying to do that more. It's not always easy because it's you're just talking out your day. Hey, you know, it makes sense that you would feel overwhelmed with your day because you had a lot of calls that you had to make, or you had a lot of client calls calling you worried about this and that and the other. It would make sense that you're a little stressed about that. So narrating is giving yourself that compassion verbally. So you're not just internalizing all of that information because it's just swirling around in your head. When you get it out, you can actually verbally give yourself grace and compassion. That, hey, it makes sense that you're stressed. It would make sense that you're scared. And when we're able to do that for ourselves, it's kind of resetting your nervous system. It's resetting your next event. So if something were to happen, like a glass being spilled or a glass breaking, you're able to approach that from a more level-headed viewpoint versus I'm already stressed. I'm already this, that, and the other, and now I'm going to take it out of my kids. You know, and so that's just an ongoing process that we're learning now.
Yeah, that's a really good tool in your tool belt.
Yeah, it's really cool. I was having a conversation with my brother a couple weeks ago. We were up to visit him, and he was just sharing some things with work struggles and stuff. And I was asking good questions, and he started to narrate to himself the situation. He goes, now that I have said that out loud, I feel 100% better about the situation. And it's like, that's what narrating does. Really exposes the truth of the situation, because in our minds, we make it out to be a bigger mountain than what it is. It's a molehill. It's not a mountain, right? And so spilled water, a broken glass, that can always be cleaned up. We can always buy a new glass, you know? And so whenever we're responding more intensely in a situation, there's something else going on internally that's causing us to do that.
Yeah, I would agree. There is something going on internally. Yeah, certainly. Awesome. Joe, man, thank you so much just for all the time you spent with us today. Appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on, Tim.
Fellow fathers and friends, so glad you could join us for this episode. To stay connected, visit our website at fatherandfriend.com. Sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and other social media sites. Be sure to like, follow, and share with fellow dads and families in your community. If you have a topic you'd like us to discuss, send us a message and let us know. Until our next episode, keep showing up, loving deeply, and making an impact for the good of your family. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Father and Friend.